not in time.
Did you see him go?
He was at the motel. I think he changed the plates because he was going to use your truck. But someone else came along and he hitched a ride, which was better.
Who
came along? Not one of us, just someone driving through.
What kind of car?
I'm not good with cars. I think it was white.
Did he say where he was going?
The doctor drank most of his second glass.
Gulp, swallow, gulp, swallow. He said,
he's going to Virginia.
Why?
I don't know,
the doctor said. He filled his glass again.
But that's all he's ever talked about, right from the first moment he got here. He's on his way to Virginia, and always was.
What's in Virginia?
He didn't say.
A woman, perhaps, that's the impression I got. From what?
Just the feeling.
Jacob Duncan said,
you're nervous.
The doctor said,
of course I am.
Why? You're just sharing a drink with your neighbors. The doctor said nothing. Jacob Duncan said,
you think he's coming back?
I don't.
Is he coming back? The doctor said nothing.
Tell us.
The doctor said,
he was a military cop. He knows how to do things.
What things?
He said he's going to visit with the county police. Tomorrow morning, I suppose. He said he's going to look at the file from 25 years ago. If it's okay, he's going to Virginia. If it's not, he's coming back here.
Why would he?
To get you. That's why.
Up in Canada, the white van had made the right turn just shy of the town called Medicine Hat and was heading south on the lonely road that led down toward Pukalki Lake. It was already full dark up there. No lights at all, and no moon or stars either, because of the clouds. The road was bad. It was pitted with potholes. It twisted and it wandered and it rose and it fell. It was hard going, and not entirely safe. It was dangerous, even, because at that stage, a broken axle or a busted half-shaft would ruin everything. So the driver turned left on a rough, grassy track he had used before, and bumped and bounced 200 yards to a picnic spot provided for summer visitors. In winter, it was always deserted. The driver had seen bears there, and coyotes, and red foxes, and moose, and twice he thought he had seen elk, although they might have been shadows, and once he thought he had seen a wolf, but it might have been just another coyote. But he had never seen people. Not in winter. Not even once. He parked under a towering pine and shut down for the night. Roberto Cassano and Angelo Mancini pulled their rented Impala around the back of the Marriott and slotted it next to a black Cadillac that was standing alone in the rear of the lot. They got out and stretched and checked their watches. They figured they had time for a quick dinner before their reinforcements arrived. The diner or the rib shack. They liked neither one. Why would they? They had taste. And the retard local yokels sure as hell didn't. But they were hungry, and they had to eat somewhere. They pondered for a second and decided on the diner. They turned away from the hotel lobby and headed for the main drag. The Duncans let the doctor finish a third glass of wild turkey, and then they sent him on his way. They pushed him out the door and told him to walk home.
They watched him down the driveway, and then they turned and strolled back and regrouped in Jacob's kitchen. Jacob put the bottle back in the cupboard and put the glass in the sink and returned the chair to the corner of the room. His brother Jasper asked,
"So what do you think?"
Jacob said. "About what?"
"Should we call the county and stop them showing Reacher the files?"
"I don't see how we could do that."
"We could try.
It would draw attention." Jonas asked, "Should we call Eldridge Tyler? Strictly as a backup?"
"Then we would owe him something."
"It would be a wise investment if Reacher is coming back."
"I don't think he's coming back," Jacob said. "That's my first thought, certainly. But ultimately, I guess it depends on what he finds and what he doesn't find."
Chapter 30. Reacher found a statement from the little girl's father. It was long and detailed. Cops weren't dumb. Fathers were automatic suspects when little girls disappeared. Margaret's father had been Arthur Coe, universally known as Artie. At the time of his daughter's disappearance, he was 37 years old, relatively ancient for a father of an 8-year-old back in the 1980s. He was a local man. He was a Vietnam veteran. He had refused an offer from the local Selective Service Board to classify his farm work as an essential occupation. He had served, and he had come back. A brave man. A patriot. He had been fixing machinery in an outbuilding when Margaret had ridden away, and he had still been fixing it 4 hours later when his wife came to tell him that the kid was still out. He had dropped everything and started the search. His statement was full of the same kind of feelings Dorothy had described over breakfast. The unreality, the hope against hope, the belief that the kid was just out playing somewhere, surely to God, maybe picking flowers, that she had lost track of time, that she would be home soon, right as rain. Even after 25 years, the typewritten words still reeked of shock and pain and misery. Arthur Coe was an innocent man, Reacher thought. He moved on to a packet marked by hand, Margaret Coe Biography. Just a regular manila envelope, quite thin, as would befit an 8-year-old's short life story. The gummed flap had never been licked, but it was stuck down anyway from dampness in the storage facility. Reacher eased it open. There were sheets of paper inside, plus a photograph in a yellowed glassine jacket. Reacher eased it out and was surprised.